Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. It is the Red Men TV podcast. Hope everyone's had a fantastic Christmas. We are here. We have returned. We've got a couple of kickoff questions we're going to get through. We're going to be talking about the title race and whether it's the best or worst ever, which I'm seeing a lot of fans from other clubs go, this is really interesting and exciting, whereas really it's just mad, isn't it? Some stuff about the Gini Wijnaldum contract situation, Liverpool centre-back issues, and a little bit on the Everton City game being postponed and what that knock-on impact of that might be moving forward. I'm Paul Machin, and Chris Pajak joins me, as does Ross Chanley. Kick-off question number one, from Horrible Grandma. After a legal challenge, LFC can no longer play You'll Never Walk Alone. What song do you choose to replace it? And it's a trickier question because there's some answers that you immediately want to jump to and realise they're either dead wool or like some other football club has added off
or
already.
Or rugby.
Yeah.
Sad like Jerusalem or something like that, you know what I mean?
Which should be the national anthem, by the
Absolutely
way.
Absolutely agreed. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Bird is the word.
And then clapping out. Have you heard about the word? Yeah, absolutely. Ross, have you got any suggestions?
I think it'd have to be a Beatles song for me. And yeah. I know, I think it was like fucking ages ago, they sang She Loves You, but I don't think that'd go. Imagine, I think they sang after the Barcelona game? I think that's still got like the emotions and the Liverpool thing from it. I think I would have a bit of that before every game. That'd get me going.
I was thinking through the Beatles stuff and it's like
Let It Be is a bit depressing before a game.
Yeah, and City have had off ages, haven't they?
Oh yeah.
Which I mean, we should claim it back for the City. But like I Iron Man by Black Sabbath, just go for it. Because it's funny because the whole music thing, it's a very fine balance, isn't it? Because we obviously had song two is the goal music but I get it. I get it at the same time, but. Yeah, there's a fine balance because every song's got so many different connotations and stuff. I'm thinking of it as like walk-on music. Without having been able to walk on, literally, and something that you would feel empowered by.
Lay. Just belt that out.
Bit of Stone Cold Break Glass.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. Oh, yeah, maybe that's just it. Let us know in the comments if you're live. You can do that right now. Callum CPT.
I do like the idea of 54,000 people doing the Bird of the Word dance, though. I mean, that's pretty impressive. The fella in the music video, it's from like the 60s, isn't it? He just basically runs around the stage doing that all the time. Like,
nice. Do the funky
chicken. Can't see that catching on.
Callum says, "What?" I figured Chris would have an answer to this question, so I thought, I'm also happy to sit back and open the stage up to yourself.
I've seen the second one.
Best Boxing Day sandwich.
Oh,
I see. I have not been having Boxing Day sandwiches. I
never asked what else you've been having. What's your best Boxing Day sandwich?
Well, then it's turkey, pork, sausage meat stuffing, bacon stuffing. Sprinkling of sage and onion stuffing, cranberry sauce, English mustard, gotta be homemade. Can't be buying that Coleman shit that's already mixed. It's gotta be from the powder with the water. Little thin spreading of mayonnaise, pigs and blankets.
Selection of bread?
Multigrain. Yeah.
Multigrain?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I've probably got two.
Just bread, not baguette, roll.
Sliced, thickly sliced multigrain from the bakery in the Sefton Arms car park that are there from 9:30 till 3:30 every Friday.
Probably one or two. I'm either going to go panini or I'm going with a giant Yorkshire pudding so you can turn it into a wrap. Then you get your pigs in blankets, your stuff and your turkey, cranberry, I'm also lashing a bit of brie in there as well, so when you heat it up, it melts in there nicely. Aww. And then, yeah. And then if you want...
gravy?
Yeah, well, optional, dipping gravy. So if you're going Yorkshire pudding, dip it in, but also if you're going toasted panini, you've got a bit of gravy there, so you can use gravy as you wish. It doesn't get messy, you can eat it, and then you're there.
Sounds amazing. Yeah, that sounds absolutely amazing.
Absolutely sensational. Can't be top.
Actually, can we just add smoked shrieky to mine as well?
Yeah.
You can do that with the Yorkshire pudding one week. You wrap it around the Yorkshire pudding until you've got a bacon on the outside.
Then deep fry it and then cover it in cheese.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, deep fry it again.
It's like going to America, really, isn't it?
If you're not going for gravy, you can go for that other leftover cheese that you've got and make a little fondue out of that and dip it in the cheese.
Oh, mate.
Oh, wow.
Oh, raclette.
Oh, Chandler's just coming. Bodied Payjack on a fucking that's food amazing. Question that's here amazing. On a yeah. Wow.
I go can on I have Ross's, please?
Wow. Yeah. Okay, fantastic.
Would you go football? Yeah. Butty, cheese.
Yeah, whatever Charlie makes.
Just a cream crackers. No, to be fair, you can't go wrong. It was the dark meat turkey, cranberry sauce. What's that? Pigs and blankets. Yeah, whatever's left of the stuffing. Yeah, that was fine. And the gravy question's interesting. Do you find a way to integrate the gravy into your butty and compromise the structural integrity, or do you go with a dipping option?
No, people stack the butties wrong. Like that's the issue that they have when they're putting gravy and stuff. Yeah, exactly. So you don't want the gravy anywhere near the bread. So if you're using loads of fucking stuffing and stuff like that and turkey, get it in those layers instead of compromising the bread elements of your sandwich.
Nice.
You've been doing it wrong for years, lads.
There you go.
You don't want a soggy bottom, do you?
No, you do not want a soggy bottom.
Unlucky. Right, fantastic. Yeah, we're going to be diving into the title talk, etc. in a moment. But we've got a fantastic offer for you guys, and there's a little bit more info on that. Hey everyone, just want to let you know about a fantastic offer that we have right now over on our merch store where you can get an amazing 25% discount off amazing products over there right now, from hoodies, t-shirts, sweatshirts to our wonderful book, Champions of Everything. To get involved with that, simply use the code TOP at Xmas at checkout and get yourself 25% off and get kitted out in Boss Liverpool merch for the new year. Yeah, welcome back everyone. Yeah, 25% discount runs until New Year's Eve, if you want to get involved with that. And actually, just want to give one final shout out while we're here, because Ross is going to be doing the draw for the Jordan Henderson signed t-shirt immediately after this show. So if you want to be in with a chance of winning the signed Jordan Henderson Champions t-shirt, then sign up as a club legend on the redmentv.com. Get access to our full suite of incredible streaming content and win yourself a signed Jordan Henderson t-shirt as well. So yeah. Head over to theredmantv.com right now and do that last chance saloon for any of you lucky people watching this live right now. Okay, so Chris, we've had a day or so to reflect on the game at the weekend. It still stings. I think the sting stings a bit less, seeing just how crap everyone else kind of is around us.
Yeah, I still think that, you know, it's an opportunity lost for Liverpool. Ooh. I don't think the performance was good enough, certainly second half. The results of everyone else obviously plays into it and makes me feel slightly better, but we had the easiest run over Christmas, and that's the thing that makes it more painful for me. So that kind of counterbalances, because I think that's 2 points lost for Liverpool there. There are extenuating circumstances, of course, there always will be this season. Every time you have a poor result, you could point to five things why Liverpool haven't played at the top of the game, but opportunity lost still. We'll move on. Hopefully we'll get a good result against Newcastle, and hopefully over the next few weeks we'll see the benefits of having that 7 days without a game, as it were. But no, it still hurts a little bit, to be honest.
Yeah, still annoyed. I agree with everything Chris just said, but also I was annoyed at Fulham, I was annoyed at Brighton, I was annoyed with other games. Liverpool have opportunities to put things right. I agree, it softens the blow. Even last night, was it Chelsea Villa? You know, they're both pretty close to us dropping points, and then you go, you know, we've got two more points there, but you know, it's ifs and buts. I think you can be let it go for now, be angry when it comes to the end of the season, and you can reflect on those moments going, well, we should have put a performance in against West Brom. It might be the difference towards the end of the season because things are so tight. But as I said on the final word the other day, last year we were, what, 7, 8, 9 points clear at this point last season. you know, with a couple of games to, in hand as well. So, you know, it's, we're trying to compare it to that when you can't, and it's just a fucking mad season.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said about the game. The most annoying thing about it is that when there's like Allardyce is almost a law unto himself, and he's not, because there's plenty of managers who kind of fall into that category down the years. In the, and by that I mean, you know what you're getting, and you'd like to think that that should help you stop you falling into the trap. But like, people consistently fall into the trap year in, year out. These guys keep on this perpetual cycle of managerial roles, come in and they come into frustrated teams. It's mad that we should be able to come out on top against the Tottenham Hotspur and then not be able to batter, absolutely batter at West Brom everywhere. And that's the thing that stings most about it, because it was so, it feels avoidable because you know what's going to happen, but there was something about that. The second half in particular, I just wonder whether the, you know, we always go in at half time, okay, so I always talk about we'll be stronger second half, and whether Sam Allardyce, I think we like to kind of go, wow, oh, Sam Allardyce, and we laugh him off, but he's not, he looks stupid, but he's not. he is a student of the game, and he's a student of what other people do, and he's the guy who looks for fine margins in here and there. And I do wonder whether he went in and goes, well, Liverpool do tend to come out really strong in the second halves, having analysed what we do, so we'll do something a bit different at the start of the second to try and upset Liverpool's rhythm or whatever, because that would be very Allardyce.
I think for a start, I don't think we have come up against a side like Allardyce's this season, not first half anyway.
Yeah.
Because you know, the difference with Tottenham is, yeah, they're good players and they work hard and they're sitting in and they're not looking to sort of attack in quite the same way, but they were looking to attack. They were looking for the counter-attacks. Sam Allardyce's West Brom side, we're not. They didn't even play a flipping striker in that first half, you know what I mean? And I think that shocked Liverpool a little bit. And second half, I'd have guessed Klopp and everyone in that dressing room will have been like, right, it's more of the same. They're going to come out on 70, 80 if it's still close. And he did change it right then on 45. And then from that first 5 minutes of the second half, they probably had three opportunities in the first 5-10 minutes of that half. And I think that shocked us. So I think he's actually not only shocked us with how they played first half, he's shocked us with how they've come out second half. So I think you've got to give Allardyce a little bit of credit there. Yeah. I don't think Jürgen saw both of those moves coming, as it were, and the team didn't react quickly enough to it.
It takes away our little advantage in that regard, because we are so very good at analysing what teams have done. Well, if a team goes in, and like, they don't fundamentally, completely and utterly flip their tactics on the head or anything, but there is enough of a change there that anything that will have been said in where you should be, how your position to be, here's how to exploit these spaces, it wouldn't shock me if so many of those opportunities simply weren't present in the way they were set up.
Yeah, it's also difficult in the fact that that was his second game in charge, wasn't it? I think the first game they lost to Aston Villa, but he'd been in charge for a day. So, you know, it's hard to analyse when it's a new manager bouncing. We've seen it loads of times. It feels like every time a club gets a new manager, they're playing Liverpool next. You know, we've seen it with what?
It's either that or we get them sacked.
Yeah, all that. You know, we've had it with, was it Alan Pardew, who's the fucking fat fellow who was at Leicester? It was Craig Shakespeare. Like, he's fucking done it before as well. So it's hard for Klopp and his team to predict what they're going to do, because there's such a different team to what they were under Slaven Bilic. You can say, what, you know, watch Big Sam games, what it's different players, the different use of how they utilise those players. But it's also in-game management from Liverpool players, and I just don't think there was enough a sense of urgency at times. But yeah, it might have shocked them, but also those players are experienced enough, you know, it's particularly in the league, to assess situations and change things. So maybe it was not a lack of leadership, because I think that's too strong, but also just I just wanted a better reaction from them, and it didn't come.
And it comes down to it, and it's easy to say this, you've only got what you've got available to you, and I think an Abby Keita makes that game a bit different. I think Thiago Alcantara, I'm told, will make that difference. I mean, I was thinking about him this week. He played the pass of the century on one knee in the Merseyside derby, but they're the kind of situations where I think is when you come up, when you lose your rhythm and you're not quite got your game plan kind of gets sucked into a monotony of a football match or whatever, and you need some spark. Players like Thiago, who have been there, done it, and they've got their role is long established. His role doesn't change. His job, he lives to pass the ball to other people in dangerous areas. you actually, without falling into this trap we've had for 3 years of like, we need to create a midfielder, you do. It's not, it was never a wrong point. Having someone who literally lives to make the impossible passes happen is a very important weapon to have in your arsenal in games where you're struggling to create opportunities.
Yeah, and I think that's it. I mean, quite often this Liverpool side, and I love Jordan Henderson, everyone knows that, I think he's amazing. But this Liverpool side looks to Jordan to do that, and that's not really his game.
He's a percentage passer.
Yeah, exactly. More so than, you know, he's going to break a game open, Pirlo-esque or Thiago-esque. And that's the difference, is you saw when he came on against Chelsea, and I know they had 10 men and stuff like that, but everybody looked towards him to give him the ball, and he was looking for these direct balls into feet, and he trusted the players around him, even though he hadn't played with the players around him at that point. And that's what you're looking for. You are looking for someone to do something slightly different, break the mould, because Liverpool have a mould in those games. And when we broke the mould first half, and it was Matip who broke it, we scored a goal. Yeah. We needed more of that, and unfortunately Matip was the one that goes off, and you shouldn't be relying on your centre-half to do that anyway. You do want a midfielder who's going to grab the game by the scruff of the neck, and Thiago would have done that. It doesn't matter. The lads on the pitch were good enough to be able to do that anyway, mm-hmm. and they should have done. I think, you know, again, the Matip injury is a big one for me. It does sort of halt Trent's influence on the game in a forward with regards to him going forward. So, you know, he's not there to be able to supply those passes quite as often as he was first half as well. And it's just one of those games. Yeah. You have to just shrug them off sometimes.
Yeah. Sorry, Paul. In the bigger picture of things, we've only lost one game in the league this season so mm-hmm. far, which, and the standard for the past 3 years has been, or 4 years maybe, has been so high. I think we're all expecting that again. It's just not going to happen. And again, like I said before, we're not in the Christmas period we were last season, so we haven't played as many games, so things look slightly different. But as much as all these draws are very annoying, they're still picking up points where our opposition teams are drawing, or you look at Man City or other teams, they're losing games. So Man City will lose more games between now and the end of the season. I'm sure Liverpool might lose one or two, but as long as we're putting our points on, not zero, which, you know, is a dead shit way to look at it, because we should have won the game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's...
Well, I want to talk about the potential title challenges and stuff, because I think City are an interesting conversation. We were going to do it then, but it actually ties into what we're talking about here. Obviously, we've seen Everton City postponed, so that's now two City fixtures that have yet to find a place in the schedule, because they're still waiting on the first game of the season against Aston Villa to be picked as well. They're the ones, because I was looking at who are the title challenges, and it's mad, because as I went through this agenda, the last time I wrote it, Spurs... It was us and Spurs with the two top teams. They're seventh in the Premier League right now. Like
Spurs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did that when I read the agenda.
Exactly. Tottenham Hotspur, at time of recording, so we're here, you know, it's Tuesday morning. Seventh in the Premier League. That's balmy. And nothing speaks to the madness of this season quite as much as we went from a title decider 2 weeks ago to, like, they're now, I mean, they're not, because it's obviously, it's only
was it even was it 2 weeks ago, it was just less than 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? Wow.
Yeah, it's mad.
Fine, I'm good with that.
That's,
yeah,
that's the league this season. And, you know, and that's the thing, I think a lot of people's fears come from Man City pulling a 10 game win streak together. They ain't done that for a while. Mm-hmm. Like, they just haven't done that now for a long time, actually. And I think they have got the potential. I think City are going to be... City and United seem to me to be the two strongest contenders. And I don't think United will be able to go the entire stretch. I do think City look a little bit better with Ake and John Stones at the back. And, you know, they're not conceding as many goals. I don't think they're scoring as many goals either, but they seem to, the last couple of weeks, to have just started to click in the attacking sense. And they've got Aguero back and all that type of stuff. So I get that, and I get that they're probably going to be there at the end of the year with us. But also, we're managing our squad at the same time, and yet we're still ahead of them. Mm-hmm. So that says to me, and I said this last week, for the first time, I think Liverpool have got the best squad in the league. Mm-hmm. And I think Liverpool have had the best side in the league for the last 2 years, give or take. But now we've got the best squad, and we're showing that by the fact that we're still top of the league. Now, we're not as consistent as we've been because of those injuries and stuff. And I think it is important that Liverpool sign a centre-half in January. I think it's massively important that we do that, especially with Joel Matip and his injury record and everything else. But I still see that it's probably between us, City and United. I still think we're the strongest.
Well, it just does. Again, as looking at it right now, we're top 3 points behind as Leicester, who've played a game more. Everton back are there, and then in third, same points as Leicester. But again, they've got that. The Man City game postponements will be an issue for them moving forward. United have got a game in hand on us, again, underneath that. 27 points. Villa in fifth, Chelsea are in sixth, City down in eighth, Southampton slipped down to ninth. It's the City one, is the one for me where I don't think anyone else is really going to mount anything consistent, but I think we should have one eye on Man City because it's those games that you don't want to end up in a situation because we can be annoyed by draws, and you know, but they don't matter at the moment. But you know, because let's if City had beaten Everton yesterday, they'd be 3 points behind us before we played. If we then go and beat Newcastle, they'd be 6 points behind us with a game in hand. When you enter into a territory where they play their games in hand and they can go above us in points, that's what you need to be safeguarding against, Ross, because they're in a false position in the table. Whereas I think everyone else,
I just
give
them
mad.
Wins. I always look at it and just give City and United wins in games in hand.
And that's what Liverpool should do and keep Liverpool on their toes. You know, we've mentioned the past three seasons before, they've gone toe to toe, but they've raised each other's games because they've both been so good. It'd be interesting to see when Man City do play those games. You know, I'm sure with the Carabao Cup and everything else they've got going on, those fixtures will catch up with them at some point. But I know they've got a massive squad, and you mentioned the centre-halves, and they've got Diaz and Laporte and in there as well, but I still think they're missing that leader and company. Aguero's not been firing all cylinders, you're right. They're missing Sané, you know, who was injured last season as well. David Silva, they're going to miss this season. They don't seem right now that same team, but they can still gel and they can still get better throughout the season, so they're still a concern for me. Man United, I think Europa League might fuck them up. Mm-hmm. Playing Thursdays, so I don't think.
They've got, as you mentioned the other week, they've got an extra round of fixtures because of the Europa League. Chris, you've been saying the Man United thing for ages, and you might well prove right because I look at Man United and I look at them, the players they've got available to them, and when they come up against Everton in the League Cup, and they've got Edinson Cavani, who they can just put into a game of football. They get to bring Cavani and Martial into a game, whereas Everton are like, there's our best 11 players and we've got a couple of other lads who come in to try and keep them fit, and they're slowly sort of dwindling off. You can see the gulf in class and squad qualities, and I wonder whether the United thing, my feeling with them is they've got a little two or three game tricky spell. I don't know, I don't even look at their fixtures, it'll just happen, where they'll have a couple of games where they'll be a little bit off form, they'll struggle for a few bits, and if they ride that out, because Chelsea are in it at the moment, Spurs have just had a little bit of one, Leicester are having a little wobble with two back-to-back draws, etc. United's will come. It's whether they are able to come out the far side, and it's whether that overriding quality of squad, that's probably what's going to see them through, because when you've got loads of good players like we're sort of seeing, you can patch yourself up and keep going regardless of all the problems.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, Bruno Fernandes is the one. He makes them tick, doesn't he? And teams are struggling to get a hold of him, and that's the problem for everyone else in the league at the moment, that he's genuinely world class, and he's playing in an area where he can affect games and win games for Manchester United. And you know, I like Rashford, I think he's a really good footballer, but he misses too many opportunities for me. He's still got the potential to knock in 20 goals between now and the end of the season because he gets into those opportunities. Martial, good striker as well. Cavani just seems to fit perfectly in the same way that what's his face did a few years ago. Who'd been everywhere. Oh, what's his name?
Seb Larson.
No.
But it's a great shout.
Zlatan.
Yeah.
And the way that Zlatan just went in and knew he was the best player there, Cavani's just able to do that as well. And, you know, I think is he 33, Cavani?
There about.
Yeah, I mean, he just looks like a player still. Mm. And he just knows where the back of the goal is. And he just seems to find space. He dropped deep the other day, played a lovely little assist in one game probably a week ago or so. He just knows how to play football. And United have got a decent defence as well. People laugh at Maguire. I don't think he's a great defender. But as a unit, they're all right. Mm. And they've still got a goalkeeper who can save shots. So I think they'll be there or thereabouts, Manchester United. I think the manager will probably let them down at some point because I don't think he's good enough.
And that's,
I think
that's
the difference.
It's how they react to that and the inevitable spell where it's just a team comes and does them against the odds, and how they then pick themselves and whether Ole's got the ability to direct themselves. Again, we're going to see that with Chelsea right now, because Chelsea's last five.
There's rumours he's getting sacked. Yeah, Lampard, there's generally rumours coming out.
15 he's got.
One win in the last five for Chelsea.
They're talking about City next, Tuchel going into Chelsea already. You know, it was breaking in one of the German papers, because Tuchel's German, isn't he?
I think.
So it broke in one of the German papers that Tuchel's being lined up for the Chelsea job already.
There's definitely something with him floating around that there's going to be a club that you know, managers come up and clubs have, like Everton did this with Ancelotti. It was like, Ancelotti's available, quick grab him before someone Arsenal. Better than, so exactly.
And we did it.
We
got rid of Rodgers at a time when Klopp was available.
Yeah, exactly that. And I wonder whether Chelsea do that with him, or whether Arsenal take the plunge. And I suspect Chelsea are ruthless enough that they wouldn't give a fuck about Lampard. Was I wonder whether Arsenal would have the? I don't think Arsenal have got the ruthless streak to tell Mikel Arteta to get in the bin and sort that out, which is fine by me.
Can I chuck an outside shout in? And it's not for the title.
If you say Southampton.
No, not for the title, but a team that I think will cause issues to teams at the top and have done so far this season. It's Aston Villa. Mm-hmm. I think they've their recruitment over the summer in Ollie Watkins. I think they bought Martinez, who's for me was Arsenal's better goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Left back Matt Target. You know, they've got Grealish, John McGinn. They've got some really good players in there. And they can, like, even last night, was it Chelsea they played last night? But the causing teams issues. And I think teams.
McGinn was really good.
I think man of the match before.
And they did that without Mings.
Yeah. They've got some good plays, and I think that you know, beating us 7-2 or 7-1, whatever the fuck it was, has given them the confidence to kind of go on. They don't have European football either, so you know, whereas teams like Liverpool, Man United, are, you know, are trying to field two teams essentially to get through this, they don't have that. I don't think they're in talk for the title as such, but you know, are pushing for a top four place on the current form as we stand now. I think they're in a conversation for it.
Yeah, I think that's it's a good shout. And we were talking about this before, weren't we? It actually, because Aston Villa are doing so well in the league at the moment, that I wonder whether they're going to go into the FA Cup game with us and feel the second string team in the same way, because they've got a genuine chance at Europe at the moment. And you know, yeah, Smith might decide that, you know, we can go on and we can do well in the FA Cup as well. But I've got a feeling right now that they think they can get top four, and so they might just rotate in the FA Cup against us. I think we're definitely rotating anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, the way the league's spread out is just fascinating at the moment, because, again, I've seen people saying it's the most exciting title race ever and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not feeling that at all, because it could be the most hilarious one, because, again, Tottenham, they are 3 points behind second place Leicester. So there's nothing in it, but you're seventh in the league.
It feels like a race hilarious. For top four. Like that's how top four races go for the most part every year. Two wins on the bounce and you're up into fourth. You're losing, you're down into eighth. Yeah. But it actually just seems to be that right now it's actually for first.
Well, Man United are on 27 points, and obviously all this will change in the next week. But 27 points for Manchester United, all the way down to Southampton in ninth. They're only 2 points behind them. You know, it's a win here and there. It's having a transformative effect on all this. This was it. There's so much flux at that top end of the table. Liverpool's job is just to keep. It'll be lovely if we can put our foot down and start to accelerate away from it. And if we get the win against Newcastle, that could well be a surprise. That could put a surprising amount of distance, given how a few people feel after on the back of the draw. But the minute, look, the way the league's structured, it's the draws that have got us top of the league. You know, yeah, you can point out to the wins, because the wins, of course, but we've won as many games as Leicester and Everton, the two teams below us. We've got five draws, and Leicester and Everton have got two draws apiece. And it's because they're losing games of football and we're not. And that's at this point of the season, it's those fine margins. We kind of scoffed at the Brighton and at the Everton draws and Fulham and that. But they've made a significant difference to our points tally all of a sudden. And it doesn't feel like it, because we're so used to Liverpool needing to win 37 games a season in order to be title challenges. But no, it is. It's going to be interesting to see how it shapes up in the next week or so. Right, we're going to talk about some of the transfer stuff sort of floating around. Genie reflecting on Liverpool's contract offer. I can't help but feel that if Genie Wijnaldum was going to sign a new contract for Liverpool, he'd have signed it by now, unless it's, you know, I mean, I think it's sensible play from his agent Ross, because there's no rush. You know, it's the January 1st is approaching. He'll already have a stack of unofficial offers on his, you know, in his inbox or whatever. There will be plenty of takers for Genie Wijnaldum in the summer. And it might just be a case where they just get to play a bit of brinksmanship here. He's been the team. He's playing well. He's important to how Liverpool do. As far as the negotiations go, his agent's got a lot more power than he will have had in the summer.
Yeah. I still have a little bit of hope, to be honest with you. And you know, I think it broke during the middle of the game, actually, wasn't it? Fabrizio Romano kind of said that there's enough there from Liverpool, which I didn't expect. I, you know, I thought Liverpool were kind of done with negotiations, and it was just a, you know, a matter of which team he wants to go and pick. But the fact there's enough there on the table, you know, where it's more hope than anything, suggests, you know, maybe he's playing off against other teams and he wants the contract that he deserves. On the flip side, if he does go, I said this the other week, fine. I think it's always the fear of not knowing or not being in control. If he wants to move on, sound, I'm okay with it. I respect him. You know, he wants to go and, you know, change career, or, you know, not change career, change the team, change career if you want. Go and be a model.
Go be a pilot. Yeah.
If he wants to go and do, you know, play for another club and he's got different ambitions or whatever his family wants, or, you know, I don't think it's a case of he just wants more money. You know, he's been one of our most consistent players, and, you know, one of the frustrations we've got at the minute is people's availability. Gini's been available, you know, fucking an awful lot for Liverpool and playing three games a week, and, you know, he's put his heart and soul into it, so I can't knock him for that. But he can't help but feel that, you know, he wants a different challenge. If he does that, you know, we can't slag him off for it, because everyone goes, well, why does he want to leave Liverpool? Why does he want to do that? Thiago just fucking left Bayern Munich, and we're all like, oh, Sam, he's just done the same thing.
It's an interesting one. We touched on this conversation at the weekend, Chris, but right now, Gini Wijnaldum, his importance can't be overstated, because, as Ross says, he's there, he's fit, he's available, he's played so much football for us this season. But I don't think he plays that much football. I think even if Virgil van Dijk doesn't get injured, I don't think Gini Wijnaldum plays as much football. And this is not even counting in Thiago Alcantara. I think when Liverpool were planning how the season was going to go, this was going to be the phasing out of Gini Wijnaldum season. And I think we've seen us try to do this. Keita was bought in to do this. And obviously Keita's had injury problems, so it kind of muddies the waters on this a bit. But I think Gini Wijnaldum's been better than Naby Keita. And the same way that Jordan Henderson's been better than the other players around them. But I do wonder whether when Michael Edwards and Klopp and all that sat down this summer, they were like, right, here's our options. Our best midfield three is this. Our backup options are these. Because we joked, Gini Wijnaldum is on the path, or was on the path this summer, to being the next James Milner. Mm. Like, he's our utility man who can come in and plug gaps whenever we need them.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Liverpool probably were planning for the phasing out of Gini Wijnaldum, and I don't mean it in such a disrespectful way. I just think that's they thought they had better players. I think the one thing for me as a fan is that, look, he's clearly a boss player still, and I want boss players to play at Liverpool for as long as we can. You know, I think he can go somewhere and do a great job somewhere, and that's fine. The difficulty is, I ain't seen Thiago do it yet, although I know he's going to do it when he becomes fit. So Gini Wijnaldum is a safe pair of hands for me at the moment as a fan watching it. But they're not fans who are in charge of the contract situations. They've got to look at it and go, right, we're not balancing the money just for this year, for next year, the year after, and the year after that as well. And does that stifle us in the transfer market? Does it mean we can't get somebody younger in who's going to fulfil his role over the next couple of years? Maybe Kurt Jones takes that mantle on. If we sign Gini Wijnaldum up to £150,000-£200,000 a week contract, does Kurt Jones have to stick in the wings a little bit? Do we slow his progression down? Because we've seen already that he can develop quite quickly. So there's loads of things that they've got to balance. The fact of the matter is, Liverpool have had 2 years to sign this up. Mm-hmm. If they were really, really serious about getting it done for what Gini wanted, this would have been done a year and a half ago when everybody else's contract was done. Now's the time where Gini Wijnaldum, I think Gini wants to stay. And I think Gini's backed himself into a corner with his agent where he's gone, this is what I need. And now he's got the almost final offer, and he's now got to decide whether he's going to backtrack on his words and take what's offered, or he decides that he wants to do something different. Whatever he decides, I'll back, because he's been such a great servant for us.
I think it's another one of those situations where...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Because Liverpool have been... We've had a couple of issues, like Emre Can, the most obvious one, and Philippe Coutinho, but from completely different angles in this thing. If there's money on the table for Genie, and you're saying, well, his contract's running out, he's 29 years old, or 30 years old, and you can get a bit of money from him, and it's just Liverpool go, well, that makes sense, because he's never going to be worth more money than what you've got on the table for him, which is kind of what Bayern have just had with us and Thiago. I think it makes it slightly more... an easier decision to make, like moving Torres on. You know, you can go, well, look, it's a good chunk of money for a guy who we've probably got the best of his career out of him. That's smart, but because he's leaving on a free and because he's playing so much football, it is hard. But also, there's the long term financial factors in of, again, without guessing on the numbers, but let's throw a big number. Let's say it's 150 grand a week that he wants. Over a 4-year contract, let's say, that he wants. It's not that it's a problem this year and next year. It's what that means in a year, in the year after that, and the year after that. When you're looking around at your wage budget going, I actually want to give a new contract to
Kurt,
or I want to give a new contract to Andy Robertson, or I want to give a contract to Trent Alexander-Arnold, and that money's not there because it's sat in a Genie Wijnaldum contract.
On the bench.
Effectively, yeah, exactly. Which is probably with the situation we're in with Milner at the moment.
Yeah, well, just to counter that, though, what's it going to cost you to replace him? And that's the other thing of, you know, the situation's changed, as you both mentioned. You know, Fabinho's gone to centre-back, so Genie's had more game time in that respect as well. What's the plan? Is the plan to buy another centre-back for Liverpool? And then Fabinho goes into midfield, because that's an ideal solution. Genie gets less game time, so he kind of wants to kind of move on in that respect. But are you going to replace someone, whether it's a centre-half or a midfielder, of decent quality? For me, it's...
But do we need to buy someone to replace him? Do we not have that in the squad? I mean, today, no, because that's why he's playing football matches.
Yeah.
But when you get to the end of the season and he goes, and Virgil's back, and Gomez is back, and let's say, buy another centre-back, which we'll talk about,
yeah.
You've got Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago, Jones, Keita, Oxlade-Chamberlain, and I can hear the immediate counterpoint of, you know, there's still some fitness issues within those players, but we're not short on midfielders when the sun's shining.
No, but again, like, you know, a utility player, that's what he wants to do. Maybe he doesn't want to do that. Maybe the way that, you know, the system that we play, no matter of running that he does, maybe he just fucking wants a bit of a fucking rest, or, you know, to go, you know, we've seen it with loads of people. Lucas Leiva's a good example of going to a different league and still being able to boss it at that latter stage of your career. Maybe he wants that, but I still don't think there's plenty of game time for him in this Liverpool side. You know, I know you just mentioned it there, but, you know, there's two players there that you can't rely on. Now, would you rather Genie Wijnaldum in your side or an Navicator or an Oxlade-Chamberlain? And it's to come back to the reliability, which I know is not an excuse to have a player on your side, but I think he backs up with the quality, and he can do a job in this midfield. I think he's going to do 2-3 years. But it's the, you know, even if what he gets to 2 years' time, say he signs a four-year contract, you can still sell him for money. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I know it's going to be less offers at a 32-year-old Genie Wijnaldum for whatever else, but you still get what? A couple of mil for a Genie Wijnaldum in that.
It's so hard yeah. Because again, on the face of it, it's an absolute no-brainer. Look at him now. It's hard. There's no need for us as fans to look beyond this season and next season. And that, for me, that's what we should be signing him down for, is to make sure that you've got him there for next year. Because I can't see a world where we don't need him again next season. But that boils down to the thing of, is Genie Wijnaldum, is this his Xabi Alonso final season thing, where he knows he's going, he's just going to go and give everything. So we come out on this, we remember him at his absolute best, and that's.
There is the other factor is, you know, to do the 2 and 4 year contract, for example, he'd absolutely be worth 200 grand a week for this year and next year, but maybe not years 3 and 4. I know that's what you're just saying and stuff, but that makes it hard to sell him.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the situation that Bale, I know it's exaggerated, but Bale was in at Real Madrid, where they're ending up paying half of his flipping wages to Tottenham Hotspur because he was on 600 grand a week.
Yeah.
Now, at 31 years old, is someone going to want to sign him for 20 million quid plus have to go with 200 grand a week on top for what, a 2-year deal maybe? Yeah. You know, that's why this contract is so important for Genie. And if we take that that, you know, side of the view instead and look at what Gini is. It's his last big payday before something else happens, before his career is probably over. He's got, now's his time, and he's got to decide whether he wants to play for Liverpool and trophies on less money than he's worth. Or maybe there's, I don't know, maybe there's an option on the table where Liverpool pay him £200,000 a week for 2 years and then it drops down years three and years four. And it wouldn't surprise me if Liverpool did something a little bit like that anyway, that made it, if you did sell him after 2 years, a little bit easier for the buying team.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is interesting because I think you're right. That's the point. It's a great point on that, is that it's all well and good for, he's just on the cusp, and that's what, again, it's so difficult to judge this because Gini Wijnaldum's the kind of player, I don't think you're going to see a significant drop off in his abilities or anything like that in the next 4 years. He's so robust that he's probably going to be just as good in 2 or 3 years' time. But you know, the financial knock on effect of all those things is the things that can't be.
It's why we've been signing players up to 5 year deals at 27. Because it ends on 32, and then they're pretty confident that that's the best years of their career over and done with. And you don't do it at 29 for a reason.
And that's the thing. This could be, and it sounds stupid to say this because it could be, you know, because Gini is such a good player. But in the next phase of what Liverpool are looking to do, you set a precedent by giving Gini Wijnaldum a big contract at that age. That's how you end up as one of those over bloated super clubs at the top, where you've got a bunch of lads who are your mid-tier footballers. Man United have been like this for yonks. You know, the top Spanish sides have ended up a bit like this. This is how your downfall begins, where you start giving out massive contracts to lads who aren't your best. You know, your best of your best, and haven't got all their best years ahead of them. Because, you know, as you say, whether Gini Wijnaldum can continue to be good for the next four or five years or whatever, he's not going to be a 27-year-old lad who's in the absolute prime of his career, and therefore he's going to be, which is where your wages should go. Your lads who are your best, who are an absolute prime, we've got all the years to go in the career, the lads who should be earning all your money, it's PSG, Man United, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Juventus, who are the teams that do that the other way. You need to maintain the hunger somehow. Difficult. Very difficult. Let us know your thoughts. What would you do with Gini Wijnaldum's contract situation? Dom King was badly misquoted by one of the vaguely Liverpool-related Twitter accounts. He was quoted as saying that Liverpool won't be going for anyone in January because they think they've got enough cover there in Reece Williams and that Phillips. But the quote apparently is they won't go for anyone on loan. We had a couple of super chats come in. Joey Allen, £4.99. Thank you, Joey. Says, do you think we'll buy a centre-half in Jan? And if not, do you fear a prolonged period of Reece Williams, Nat Phillips? And Ethsham Ul Hassan with £5 super chat says, do you think we could see a Trent-like rise with Reece Williams? I don't think, Chris, there's anyone among us who wouldn't buy a centre-half in January. It feels like the only thing left that's going to derail a title for us is getting to a point, because we're only now a Fabinho injury away from having nothing but children at the back for us.
Yeah, the big thing for me is, look, I know these injuries for Joe Gomez aren't his fault, and they're big injuries. It's not like he gets an England injury like Naby and misses three games, or Joel and misses three games, but he's missed 33 games in the last 3 years. Joe Gomez, that's nearly a full season in 3 years. So I'd be looking to sign a centre-half who is A, willing to challenge, and B, of the quality to challenge Joe Gomez for his spot alongside Virgil van Dijk. And I'd do that now.
Yeah.
And now the difficulty there is everyone knows you're after a centre-half. Everyone knows you're probably going to spend money in January. If Liverpool sign a centre-half, I imagine it'll be done by the 5th of January. Because I just don't see that it's going to be prolonged, because you get a month less games out of them for this season. That's what we're buying them for, first and foremost. I think it's massively important that if Liverpool want to secure this league, we go out and buy a centre-half.
Yeah, to add to that, I think the other issue is who's going to sell in January. You know, particularly if there's a really good centre-half, no one's going to sell the best centre-half to Liverpool. You know, there's probably a defender tax or a Liverpool tax, because like Chris said, you know, we want a centre-half. But, you know, if you've got a really good centre-half in your side, you're competing for something. Why would you cut yourself short? And then you fall into the knock-on effect of, oh, that team B needs a fucking centre-back and so on. I think it's really hard.
I think it's a fair enough point, but I think there's a financial ecosystem in football that exists. There's a food chain, and there's a lot of clubs who are set up and they understand their role within it. And we as Liverpool don't quite get this, but we're this as well. Liverpool have been resistant to this food chain in the last few years to allow us to step up into the top bracket, but we're not, you know, Coutinho moving to Barcelona is the last most recent example of it. Sterling moving to Man City is an example of it. Torres moving to Chelsea is an example of it. Suarez moving to Barcelona, yeah, is when we need to sell players to fund the whole endeavour. We are sell to buy, as much as people like shudder at that and think it's some sort of dirty expression. It's not. Most football clubs are. There's a chain in which the likes of Ajax, for example, Ajax don't turn their nose up at £30 million, £40 million for their players. They just don't, because for them it's all part of how they build and how they continue to operate as a football club. Now, I think you're right. I think it gives every club has a little bit more of a smirk when they look down at the call ID and it's got an 0151 number on it. Like, you really go, all right, okay. Ooh, oh, ready for this one. Like, you mean, yeah, just bump the price up by 5-10.
But again, is that not a good thing for them? Because if they're selling the thingy, they could look at it and go, well, I'm fifth in the table. I still think I can finish fifth in the table. I'm going to get an extra 10 million than I would in the summer. Okay.
Yeah. It might also not be a case of, you know, it's not the manager's call, it would be the club's call.
Exactly.
And there's so many situations where people aren't in Liverpool's, don't have Liverpool's reach in terms of maybe sponsors or, you know, sales and shirts and everything like that. During a pandemic, we'll be desperate for money and go, well, that, you know, that extra 10, 15 million as you're talking about will solve a lot of issues for this football club.
It's the directors of football, it's not the manager.
Any team in France with a good centre-half is selling right now because they are absolutely up shit's creek with the television deal that they've had. I mean, do you know about what happened? So the company that basically paid for the television rights in France have deferred payments twice or something now. So every club, and it was a new company, and they got offered so much more than any other deal they'd had on the table. So they took this deal, and now they've not paid twice because of the pandemic and stuff like that. And literally every club in France is panicked big time. France is going to be where people are going to get value for money at the moment. So if there's a good centre-half that anyone knows in France, expect Liverpool to be linked with them and not a huge amount of money either.
And the other one is, of course, is we know that the Red Bull teams tend to have release clauses and stuff, you know, in contracts and all that kind of stuff. So it wouldn't shock me if we had our eyes on a few. I think we've all heard the names that are kind of floating around. I can't see Upamecano being a thing because we've got Leipzig to come, but we also know they sold Timo Werner when they still had Champions League games to play last season, which was a bit crazy, all told. As Canate,
but looking quite smart.
Share
at the moment, right now. The way that Werner's not been finishing his dinner.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
But that might all tie into the Genie stuff. You know, if Genie stays and then Fabinho, you know, I'm not saying this will happen, might be the partner for fucking Virgil van Dijk. That's a solution. So you don't have to go on it. The problem is getting from now to the end of the season, what do you do?
No, 100%. And look, again, the point is Matip's done. You know, that's Joe Matip will never now, you know, he must be in his 30s by now. He's never.
Take it a lot on a roll. You don't rely on him every week.
No problem with keeping Matip around because he's fantastic. And you know, if you have to drop him into games, you can drop Matip in out the cold, and he'll come in and he'll put a brilliant 90-minute performance in for you. It's just, can he then pick himself up and go to the next game? No, is the answer to that. So he shifts down the pecking order. We'll find. And just to add to the questions of the lads who sent the super chat in, you know, we'll reap the benefits next year potentially. If they're good enough from what we've done with Reece Williams, and maybe if Kometi will get a game or two, you know, we might see that the way we have done with a bit more with Nico.
Or flip side of that, Reece goes for 20 somewhere. I genuinely, if Liverpool don't think he's quite good enough and don't see him as the future, man, we've sold a lot worse players for a lot more money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's at Bournemouth.
Yeah. But you're right. I wonder whether
he's shown people that he can go up against Harry Kane and Son.
Yeah, no, you'd be sending the YouTube highlights reel, wouldn't you, to any potential buyers. I think the Origi thing is going to be pivotal to what we do in this window. I think if you get some money for Divock Origi, I think it just secures what you've got available to spend, maybe frees a little bit more up in the wages. I don't even know where we are with the Premier League registrations and stuff like that. I don't know how much room we've got in the squad. It's not something I've considered previously because we're talking about bringing someone in, like, it's a no-brainer. I mean, again, you're not registered. You can deregister Virgil van Dijk, I imagine, in January, which gives you the space back for the rest of the season, unless they're looking at him going, no, but that's what I mean. He's registered. Because of course he's registered.
Coming back at the end of Jan, lad.
No, but that's what I mean. Is that I don't know whether they would will they deregister Virgil van Dijk if they feel that you might get 5 games or 2 games or 3 games out of him at the end of the season? Like, that would be mad to even think in that way. You know, that he should possibly be able to come back. But when I see him kicking footies against the wall, I think, wasn't your knee off like a couple of months ago?
When he starts doing side to side and lateral movement, that's when you know he's close to coming back. Yeah. Everything is just been forwards and backwards at the moment.
Yeah, but this is like when you think Oxlade-Chamberlain, he was doing this kind of stuff in like the February, March, I think, and then he comes back right at the end of the season. But I mean, again, it's a different world and there's lots of moving things. That. But the point is, anyway, I don't know, and maybe anyone watching at home will know the answer to this, about what our spaces look like in that Premier League squad, because it's all well and good saying, well, let's buy someone else, but if that's 26 players, someone's going to have to get booted.
I can't imagine we'd have 26, to be honest, just because we've got so many young lads, and those young lads don't need to be, do they?
Might do for Brexit, mate.
Oh yeah, that's a good point, actually.
I'm saying, do we see a trend like rise from Reece Williams? I don't not see it. I think all I see from him right now is he's fine. He's a perfectly fine defender. If you told me if he sticks around, you know, if he sticks around next season, and we'll know, we've got no choice but to find out, because I think he's probably going to play the next few games, just by circumstance as much as anything else. If we keep him next summer, I think there's a chance that we'll see a rise from him. At the minute, he goes from being a really hot prospect, wow, what a guy we've got on our hands, to being like, oh God. Stick him on loan to the Championship and see what you get from him. It's too early to tell, I think, for Reece Williams.
Yeah, like Nico Williams, he needs a consistent run of games under his belt, and then you can judge him properly, because it's the same with Nico. Like, he had a bad game, everyone wanted to slaughter him, then a couple of good games, like, oh, he's fucking hell, he's sound, you can do that. I think Williams has made a mistake against Atalanta, and he got done for pace of the day, and everyone immediately goes, well, he's too slow. Mm-hmm. Well, he's not, because you just said he's, you know, Harry Kane and Son, he was fine with. He's learning his trade. We're used to seeing the finished article because the standard is so high. We don't like people, you know, kids coming in Premier League games when the point is so valuable. It's hard to do that, but he needs to do it. And again, like I said the other day, he's been thrown into a situation where he's like, oh, fucking hell. Like, last year was at Kidderminster, and now I'm playing Premier League football and Champions League football. It's a massive fucking step up for him.
Yeah, and in answer to Joey Allen's question, I don't fear a prolonged period of Reece Williams and Nat Phillips in rotation alongside Fabinho, but I do fear a period where if them two partnering each other and us then having to do something else. And I genuinely think Liverpool fear that, and I think they're doing the right thing, Chris, by letting all the noises kind of go out there that we're not particularly interested in a centre half. I think everyone knows, as I say, every director of football on the continent is waiting for the phone call from Liverpool. We all know it's going to happen, but the Liverpool are still playing it as smartly as they can in this regard. I think Steve Orr made a good comment about this, I think it was on Twitter, about the amount of times Liverpool have just kind of briefed against their current situation. Danny Ward's the one we always talk about. That's smart, and it keeps the confidence of the lads in the squad as well, until the point at which you get someone in. But there's no way, even Liverpool players who are fighting for this place and thinking, here's my opportunities, and they might be limited, I think there'll be a ginormous sigh of relief if we pick up a paper like it's 1995, by the way, open our phones and see that Liverpool have signed a good quality centre-half. I think we'll all just
breathe a sigh of relief. Absolutely, yeah. I think Liverpool can manage by being a team, Reece Williams or Nat Phillips playing centre-half at Liverpool. I don't think we're going to have the easy wins and the accumulation of points that we would have without him at centre-half and have a proper season pro there. But as a team, we have to change, and we have to recognise that if they're going to play for a long period of time, we're going to have to do something slightly different. And I think for the most part, that is dropping Trent and Robbo a little bit deeper and maybe relying more on the outstanding qualities of the front three to break teams down without overcommitting and everything else. So I think Liverpool have still got it in the locker to win games when they're there. I definitely do fear of Phillips and Williams partnership. That is something that puts the shits up me, to be quite honest with you. But if Liverpool sign a centre half, then I know that Liverpool are placing a huge amount of importance on this season. Mm-hmm. And I think they do place a huge amount of importance on this season, because this is the season where, yeah, back-to-back league titles, once, great, back-to-back is something special.
I think the point, to your point, Ross, and it goes back to the loan thing, I don't think Liverpool are going to buy someone or take someone for the short term, because you might as well play Reece Williams, because you're going to, I don't think anyone, there's anyone good enough to do the job for us is available on loan in this window, so you need to go and buy someone. I agree with exactly what you're saying there, Chris. Is you trust that Virgil van Dijk comes back, and even if he's lost half a yard of pace, he's still the best centre half in the league. He's still our best centre half. You go and buy another Gomez. You go and buy someone else, and you pay a little bit more over the odds just to make it happen and get it done. And then you've got someone who's in proper competition. And so by the time the summer rolls around, when van Dijk and Gomez are there, you've got three top quality centre halves, all at good ages to be in that regard. You've got Matip as a backup, and then you've got what you choose one of Williams, Phillips, Kometio as your next in line behind all that stuff, and that's a very healthy situation to be in. But we got one last super chat here from Philippe Hunt saying, if we don't sign a centre back, why not play Hendo and Fab as our main centre back and rotate with Phillips and Williams? I want to sign a centre back, but we might not. I think my concern over the Hendo stuff, I've seen a lot of people saying this, like, at a push, but for a start, we need Jordan Henderson in midfield, and so much of this is hinged upon who's available for the midfield. Like, you can't expect anything from Naby Keita ever again, because he just, in two and a half years at the club or whatever he's been here now, it's never happened for him, so whatever. Curtis Jones is 19. Until Thiago puts down more than one game of football for us without, you know what I mean? Once he plays 90 minutes without getting injured, I think that can ease that. Oxlade-Chamberlain, the same. Hello. Tom, someone's at the door. I feel a little bit... I wouldn't want to stretch with Jordan Henderson in centre-back rotation is what I'm driving at.
No, because we missed too much in the midfield. Short answer, I think for single games, yeah, absolutely. But when you take Hendo and Fabinho out of the centre midfield and then you're looking at the likes of the players that you've mentioned there, Keita, Thiago, Shaqiri, or a push Minamino, or a push
Chamberlain.
The thing is, right, here's what annoys me. People are very quick to write Naby Keita off. Chamberlain's missed well more games, like significantly more games. And no one seems to be on Chamberlain's back about it. Like, yeah. You know, it's a bit of a mad one to me, to be honest.
Yeah. No, I suppose it's the Gomez versus Matip thing that we're saying before, isn't it?
So, I've got the stats here, right? Ox has missed 69 games in the last three seasons. Naby's missed 29.
Yeah. Yeah.
Azok's got credit in the bank, though, from scoring screamers. That will probably lazy
69 season. To 29.
Yeah.
that's significant.
Yeah, true.
That's significant.
True enough, but Ox was out for a full season with a cruciate knee injury, which takes him out of all of those games in that regard. So
in the other 2 years, he's pretty much done the same in a year less.
Yeah. Well, he's out, yeah. 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 Yeah, the thing with Ox,
significant.
But the thing with Ox is Ox played more. I mean, in recent history, he's probably in the last 18 months, he's probably played more than Keita, I'd suspect.
So Ox has missed 23 games in the last 2 years. Naby's missed 19.
Oh wow!
So,
oh, there you go. Yeah, fair enough. Because I think Ox was like our fifth or sixth most minutes of a player last season. You know, across the entire squad, whereas Keita barely touched the ball for us, didn't he? So, you know, but the problem remains is that in answer to the centre back thing,
you're just moving the problem to midfield, aren't you? Is what you're doing. Yeah. I know, Genie's did he play centre back in Brighton about two seasons ago?
He played in the back three.
But yeah,
was that with Chan?
Yeah,
which is fucking mental. So you know, he might be a suggestion, but then what do you do? That's my phone. In the market for a midfielder.
That was your phone.
That was my phone. I hope so. Then you're in the market for a midfielder, and then you know you're in the same problem again. Like, you know, you probably chuck Tacky in there, like you said, in midfield, or Shaqiri maybe. But you know, at what cost? You know, we're going for a title, and then when you start getting towards the back end of the season, you're playing 2-3 times a week. Can you have the same four midfielders available for three games in a week? Are you going to run them into the ground and then get them injured? It's all of some buts, but I'd keep Hendo in midfield. Fabinho stretches there until Van Dijk comes back. Long term, you need another centre back.
Mm.
Yeah, I think Jordan's got the qualities to fill in at centre half in odd games, and probably over an extended period he could do it. But you just miss too much. Yeah. You just miss too much. He's the beating heart of this Liverpool side, and you want him bang in the middle of the side for that reason.
You're right. You've gone from having a world class midfield. We were world class all over the park, and you're right. It's like you were saying, you're just transferring your issues, aren't you? So you can plug your defensive gaps, but you're fucking your midfield. And the midfield, which is more important to our Liverpool play. Well, I think on the evidence this season, having a midfield is slightly more important than having the best possible defence. I don't want us to have to find out, but that again, it comes back to it. Just to Philip's point, I just can't see how we don't buy a centre half. It would be borderline negligent to not do it. I can't see. I would be astounded if we don't buy someone in January.
The fear, as you both said, is having two kids at centre half. Like, and now I think it's all right, because if you look at the Fulham, Brighton, West Brom game, the defence wasn't really an issue. Like, obviously we conceded goals in those games, but it was finishing, you know, and a penetration from midfield and getting forward. You know, look at Liverpool's problems. I don't see Liverpool's centre back is the key reason why we're not 15 points clear at the top of the table. It's you know, lack of finishing up top. I'm not saying replace the front three, which that's just the way that it's happened. But if you find yourself a situation where Fabinho gets injured, you're fucked.
Yeah, no, completely agree. It's a mad situation, but hopefully we'll see a little bit more in the coming days. You know, we've got a few more days till the window opens. Yes, but it will be what it will be. The Newcastle game, again, it's going to be just, I can't see, again, you'd imagine it'll be Reece Williams in this one. The big opportunity here, particularly because of Leicester dropping points and what have you. It's another, we're back to it again, aren't we, Chris? Just fucking win. Just go and fucking win, do it, and put our feet up and enjoy New Year's, because the fixture schedule is mad for January, but it's far more manageable than it's been for a long time.
Yeah, it is. And this next sort of 6 weeks for us, it could have been a lot worse. It could have been loads worse, you know. And, you know, the Carabao not being in, that's a big thing for us as well. I think, you know, for me, every game for the next 6 weeks is just fucking win in whatever way you can, because I don't see that anyone's going to go on a mad winning streak and has the potential to do that. Maybe Manchester City and us are the only two teams. But
well, Man City have got to actually be allowed to play football matches again for that to be a thing, first and foremost. We'll obviously find out whether they're allowed to play.
Does anyone know how many cases they had?
It's been
three or four.
I've heard three.
What did we not have?
Three of the playing staff, I think.
I was talking to someone yesterday, and we were talking about this, and I was saying, like, oh, why aren't they saying it? And apparently it's because it's medical records. They're not actually allowed to say who it is. So Man City can't come out and say it. You know, if the player comes out on their Instagram or their Twitter and says it, that's fine. Some kind of form of GDPR or something, you know what I mean? So actually, that's why we're not clued up as to exactly who it is. And it tends
to come through, like, national press from the country. You know, if you get
foreign
players.
But it would also
explain
why Liverpool have been very, like, didn't say nothing about Naby and didn't say anything
about Manny, though.
Well, he might have come out and said it, is what I'm trying to say there. You know what I mean? He might have said it to any people in his country or something
Well,
like
it happened with Tsimikas. We got from, like, the Greek press, didn't we? Okay. Naby, we got it coming from African press or whatever. So you're right, it tends to be...
It's not the clubs coming out and saying this. Now, I don't know if that's fact-checked, but it makes sense from everything that I've learned over the last 6 months.
And also, why would you give any more information out than you have to? It's creating more of a spotlight. The City stuff's just mad because... I can't help, and I see this from Man City, a lot of Man City fans on social media, of course, and we all do this. We're all hyper defensive at our own football clubs, but like they don't understand how much what's the word? Everyone secretly is very sceptical of everything that comes out of Manchester City. You know what I mean? And they all find it balmy that people are like questioning, are there any dodgy undertakings? It's the fact that Everton have come out and gone, hey, what's happening? Why aren't we playing? Oh, you know, Everton are already geared up. They've got all the production team in the ground ready to go, and then they get a call off the Premier League going, no, it's not happening. And they've gone, why? And they go, well,
I knew 2 hours before it got fucking announced that the game was off, because I know a steward there that got a message saying don't come in today.
Well, mad though. Yeah. But yeah, it is an interesting one. And it's it's just conspiracy theorist nonsense, because and I don't see any need to go in on Man City on this, because if that happens to Liverpool, I'll be made up with them postponing a game rather than us having to play without our best players. But I also can't help but have a little bit of fucking hell, you know, it's Man City. I get it when it's Burnley, and I get it when it's Sheffield United, and I get it when it's this and that.
With my level-headed head on, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm looking at it going, that's better for the safety of Everton's players.
Yeah.
And for the safety of everybody who's involved. And that's probably a good thing, because the fucking tests, whether you believe in COVID and all that type of stuff or not, right, the tests by the medical people are about 70% accurate. So you could have all the tests in the world, you could test everybody, and they could still be, you know, false negatives and all that type of stuff. So it's like, it's for the safety of the players and for the safety of Everton's players and more Man City squads, just call the fucking thing
it's
off.
It's just a thing, yeah. It's not, I mean, at this point.
Now, my Liverpool tinted glasses are going, would they do that for us? That's where I come back and go, I don't think they do, well, you know. I think they make us play it.
Well, you enter into debate, don't you? And there's an understanding, because look, it's a global pandemic, and I think we should all err on the side of being a bit more level-headed over the whole thing. But I can't also help but go towards the whole of thing of, like, is it not just an injury? You know what I mean? Like, do the out, you know, it's a more prevalent one at the moment. You know, if everyone went down with something else, it's just a way for your players to be unavailable through fitness and stuff is the thing. So, if it was any other club, I'd be like, I would just go, yeah, fine, whatever. I mean, the fact that they've already postponed a game, a Newcastle game, was it because of COVID issues? Earlier in December, which I wasn't aware of, shows that because it's Man City, it's more I think about it more than anything else. But
I know it's dead early to tell, but it's the amount of cases that they've got, I think, is the question. Because I was hearing, like, you know, it was three, and someone else said 11 or something yesterday. If it's bad, then I think you're right. But then what's then the rules? Because did David Moyes have it, and he had to go and isolate at home, but then West Ham still carried on. I know he's not playing, but, you know, he's still a manager. He's still a manager, you know, so what's the rules? There was also that article that was doing the rounds yesterday, say that games won't be postponed. Now, I believe at Newcastle it was pretty bad, you know, they shut their training ground down, which I think Man City have done today. Well, you said, why can't you just test everyone again today?
Tuesday test. Well, that's the thing. But because of how compacted the thing. And yeah, and you've got to then get Goodison Park up and running, ready, and you've got to get all your staff back in on short notice and all those.
Put the wood back together.
Well, no, exactly. But that's the thing. It's there's more moving parts. It's not like a kick around. And it's not like, oh, we couldn't all do it because we were pissed last night. Let's go and book a pitch at the pits again and go again tonight. Which, by the way, has never happened in a million years. No one's ever missed a game and played the next day. But it's then the Chelsea game's on tomorrow. Was it the third? Maybe it's the third. It's something like that. It's close anyway. You know, it's a couple of days. It won't be tomorrow because that'd be stupid. It's a few days away, isn't it? So they've got to prepare for all that. But whatever. Let's hope everyone's fine. And
it's
I
a
get
fix
it.
Anyway.
It's more. Yeah. But the point to it is that. The Premier League will shut it down because they can't risk then Everton then having a situation where they need to then shut their training ground and they can't play their next game and then so on and so on and so on. So it makes sense to kind of cut it at that point. But the sceptic, and you can't help but think, you would Man City, if it's only three cases amongst the playing squads, they're shutting the training ground because then there's no choice, because then the Premier League will go, well, they've effectively, it's like going to ground and grabbing hold of the ball and rolling around.
It would also bring into question the Premier League's methods of dealing with COVID.
Yeah.
Like, look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they should bubble off players and that for training and stuff like that, but, you know, I know that the NFL do. I know that the NFL do look at the exact amount of groups that they have players in and all that type of stuff. So if one goes down, like the NFL game a couple of weeks ago went ahead with no quarterback because the quarterback room went down. And it went ahead and they played a wide receiver who'd never played quarterback in the game and they got absolutely tonked and it was a laughing stock for the NFL. But they carried on. So it's not a good thing either way. Yeah. But if the Premier League doesn't look like, it looks like the bubble is the Premier League squad.
Yeah.
By the way that they're all interacting and hugging after games and stuff.
Yeah.
Now, that's a dangerous situation. Now, the Premier League, they don't want any bad press on them during this time and how they've dealt with the pandemic themselves and what rules and protocols they've put into place. Now, if they know that their protocols probably aren't as good as they should be, that the three could quite easily turn into 10, could turn into Everton, could turn into who they play next. They don't want that.
And they're trying to say, aren't they, at the moment as well, that it's come from the hotel when they played the League Cup quarter-final. They're saying that's when apparently they reckon it wasn't COVID secure or whatever, and that's how they've gotten into this situation. But also it's Kyle Walker, and you can't help but think he's definitely been in an orgy, and that's exactly where he's, you know what I mean? Like, you know,
Phil Foden.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll see on that. Just lastly, Trick Josh, in answer to our question about the walk-on music and replacement of You'll Never Walk Alone, he said Little Green Bag from the Reservoir Dogs soundtrack, or Tub Thumper by Chumbawamba, which I think is you've gone a bit too far there. That's a bit,
I know you've just signed up to Club Legend level on the website, but no, you're very quick. You're going to lose that privilege with shouts like that, lad.
It's a bit, yeah. It's a touch England, that, for my liking. But no,
sorry, Josh.
Good suggestions nevertheless. Thanks so much, Josh. Yes, wonderful. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast today. If you're listening to this after the fact, then please do leave a 5-star review on whatever podcast and app you are involved with. If you're on YouTube, don't forget to subscribe to the channel. And as mentioned, last chance to do it. If you're doing this live, if you want to be in with the chance of winning the signed Jordan Henderson Champions Tee, then go to theredmentv.com, sign up as a Club Legend on there, get access to all of our wonderful content, and get in that prize draw for the Jordan Henderson Tee. What time is it now? It's 12. Should we say, what, 1 o'clock?
What time is it now?
It's 12 o'clock now. Give people till 1
10
o'clock.
Minutes. Got 10 minutes.
Oh, 10 minutes? Okay, you got 10 minutes. Get signed up on the website now. And yeah, get yourself a wonderful post-Christmas present, as well as some amazing videos, documentaries and stuff, like the Jürgen Klopp 50 Greatest Moments of the Jürgen Klopp Era so far, which we'll give you a little sneak peek on to wind up today's show. We'll be back with the podcast next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.